Hi everyone and welcome to episode 53 of the Two Sporting Muppets. We've been away for a while, no fault of Gray's, me just trying to balance work and study, but it's good to be back. And without any further ado, welcome to my friend and co-host Gray. It's been a while since I've seen you.
It's been a while, Greg, but great to see you. It's what, 4 weeks? Nearly a month, I think it's been.
I think it has been a month, which a lot of sport has happened in between, a lot of life has happened in between, but it's actually good to catch up, really, really good.
Have you said something? I just had a quick look back at my notes for the previous episode, and the Cricket World Cup, which has been going seemingly months, had already started.
Wow.
That's how long the Cricket World Cup goes from.
And I think the World Cup went for 7 weeks, start to finish, I think. As you just alluded to, some ridiculous amount of time, and I'm sure that'll come up later in our conversation. But I think it's been a good 4, maybe even 5 weeks since we've had a chat. So really, really good to catch back up.
And you can imagine the amount of emails and disappointment from all our hordes of listeners. Saying, when you're coming back, when you're coming back.
Knocking the door down with inquiries about what's happening. Is everything okay? Where have you been?
And thank you to those two people. But here we are back again.
To alleviate all fears, we are back and we'll continue into the future. It was just a short break. But we are back and happy to chat and looking forward to, you know, having a look at back what's happened over the last few weeks in the world of sport.
All right. If you're ready, Greg, let's...
I certainly am. Let's see what we can cover.
So over... Last weekend, last Sunday, the final of the World Cup, which everyone knows by now, won by Australia, who were considered the outside by many, but not by all of them. Look, India went in undefeated, 14 round games, whatever it was.
Yeah, 12, 14 games, I think, undefeated, and looked comfortable throughout. They weren't even really challenged particularly.
No, not at all. And we'll talk about that in a minute, perhaps why or whether or not. They were raging hot favourites at home, crowd behind them. I think Australia, I found out later, paying $2.80, which I really should have had a bet because I always Australia would win, as we discussed, you know, with text messaging and whatever. Yeah, Australia got the job done. So just going into the details of the match. So it was held at New Narendra Modi, named after their very popular Prime Minister, stadium in Ahmedabad. So India... probably the first surprise, Australia won the toss and bat and decided to bowl first. All commentators thought whoever won the toss would bat first. Australia chose to bowl first. India made 250 overs. They'll run out, but they lost their 10th last run out. So 240, which going by the trend of the tournament, way subpar score. Sharma, he came out blazing, 47 of 31, but played an absolute, a very, very old shot to Glenn Maxwell. Caught brilliantly by Travis Head. Talk about that in a sec, but that game turning, really. Rahul and Virat Kohli, they had to steady the ship because India, they were about 80 runs first 10 overs, but they lost it. So they had to totally change. And they knew they couldn't lose any more wicket. But Rahul made 66 off 7 balls. Virat 54 off 3 until they went. And the rest of them just had to do the best they can and scram 240, as I said. Stark got 3 for 55 of his 10. Cumming, who was just stood up, the captain's knock if ever there was, 2 for 34. Hazelwood, 250. Now, most of Australia, us included, went to bed after that first inning, thinking, yeah, Australia should win this, but you never know. And we certainly did. So we chased those down for the loss of 4 wickets. Off 43 overs. And Travis Head, who since he's came back, his injuries, just had a wonderful, wonderful World Cup. 137 of 120 delivered. With Marcus Labuschagne playing the sheet anchor role. Rotate strike, 58 of 10. So quite a, well, really, let's face it, convincing, I thought. And, it, well, your thought.
No, I agree. And you were far more bullish on Australia going in. I know we texted a few times. And, of course, always wanted Australia to win, hoping. But I really honestly didn't give them much of a chance the way India had played throughout the tournament, given the fact it was a home crowd, given the fact it was a home ground. I just thought that the way, the momentum they had going in, the support of the crowd, local conditions, I just thought, you know what, they're just going to continue and Australia will put up a good show, but we'll probably fall short. You were much more bullish and very confident from the outset that Australia would win it. And as I think I messaged you, you were looking at something I couldn't see. So kudos to you for seeing it. But I think your comment just then about Cummins having a captain's knock, and I guess that's batting parlay for, you know, what we, because, you know, we traditionally have a captain as a batter, but he was outstanding. His decision-making and his bowling, outstanding from the minute that he won the coin toss. Brilliant. And the team just fell into, you know, line behind him. They just did their, whatever they needed, their roles perfectly. And I think that was just great captain's leadership, but the team just went with him all the way. And the players that needed to stood up when they, look, I guess Steve Smith would say he's a bit disappointed in himself, but apart from that, Travis Head, as you alluded to, absolutely outstanding since he returned from his injury. Zampa, not a brilliant final, but outstanding tournament and certainly held his own. And I think, did he get 10 overs and no boundary or one boundary or something? Or
something like that.
I think no boundary, and Cummins had one boundary off his 10 overs. So like just brilliant bowling. And even if they weren't taking wickets, they were just suffocating India's batting on what was clearly during that afternoon session a difficult pitch to bat on. So I think that's, you know, I like you watch that first innings, and there's a lot of talk that if there was a bit of dew, it would actually get easier to bat on, and that's what Australia were hoping for, and that seemed to happen because I think even India struggled in their own conditions in that afternoon session.
My thoughts were, Greg. Now, choke is way too negative a word, crapping themselves, whatever you want to call it. But I still think it was one between. The reason I was a bit bullish about Australia is I was confident that if the pressure was applied, they would start doubting themselves. And it's just the aura that Australia has, particularly in big game, which, not to knock them, I think it's a little bit unfound. It's sort of like the team of 15 years ago. That aura still sort of surrounds our, who are a very good team nowadays. But if you look at it on paper, ability-wise, very little team. India probably way better batting. But anyway, just getting in their head. And that's what I think we did. And they say, play without. And I thought India, once they looked at it, they played. I don't know what you think.
I think they look really good until it was about once that third wicket fell and they were on 80-odd. I think that's when it changed. I think, you know, they came out with their mindset, batted, as you said, 80-odd off after 10. They were going in the format they'd played the rest of the tournament in. But when Australia hit that third wicket and they're still only in the 80s, I think that's when the mental game started for India and they weren't sure where to go after that, given the fact it was a final.
I think that's... And the result, being a fine. Look, I didn't see every. I could be. But from what the highlights, I assume that India, they batted first. They rolled out on beautiful batting strip. They'll make 300, 400 runs with lost wicket. This sort of Kohli making sense. The rest of the batter playing without challenge. What perplexed me was why they dished up that pitch. It definitely India. Why they didn't just do an absolute road of a pitch, I'll never know. But anyway, it came down to and Pat Cummins said, they'll happy to bowl first, apart from that. Also, because you take risks when you bowl. Okay, the team gets more runs. It's not like it's the end of it to your bat. Whereas if you're batting first and you lose wickets and that, you can lose the game there and then, which is sort of what happened. I just think, in deciding, did they shoot up? Well, I think, probably they did, to be honest. Look,
I think it's a combination of the conditions weren't what they thought they were going to get, and then the occasion being in front of their hometown probably got to them a bit. So I think it was a combination of both.
One point, playing for 1 point cut. Yeah, it couldn't be easy. I'm happy to admit that. But yeah, look, and Australia, to their credit, well, AAR, just like it was fine. You know, it was like every run, their life, diving to save a bounce. That happened so often, and infielding was good. It was just fantastic. So it was just applying, wasn't it? It was just applying the pressure, keep applying. Look, India, Rahul and Cole, when they batted for 25 off, they set up well, but then they got out. That's what killed them. You know, that's when it thought, okay, they might get out of this by making three. But then when they got it, and as you know, in one-day cricket, the best way to slow the score is take
wickets. Slows it down. As you said, even 2020, take some wickets, it slows the scoring down, and that's exactly what happened. And I think just the way that they'd played and the pitches they had, and they played really well, they hadn't been in that position any other game.
They hadn't had to
think like that in any other game leading up to it. So maybe your point, before, maybe a loss earlier on would have been better for them. And I think in terms of the pressure they were under from the crowd or the hometown would have been better because they had a loss coming in and, just tempered the expectation just a smidge, but just they'd been so dominant throughout, didn't look like losing. I think everyone just assumed straight up. And look, I was one of those. I know I messaged you. I didn't have Australia winning at all. I was so pleasantly happy and surprised when I woke up, texted you straight away when I read it because I didn't see it coming. So I think, the pressure that they were under and not having that experience earlier in the tournament probably didn't do them any favours.
I totally. Like you said, and as you said it well just then, I never got themselves a situation where they had to think their way through it, had to dig deep. And, when things weren't going their way, everything, pitches they love batting, not challenge. Wait until the final. And I mentioned then that sort of aura. I texted a mate of mine, an Indian mate, who said, I said, are you confident? And he goes, yes, I am. I said, however, with Australia, never know. So he said, anyone else would have almost been celebrating. Australia always that. And that's what the Australians did. Put the pressure on India, a little bit of self-doubt. And because it's easy, isn't it, to play without is easy in normal game, but in games that matter, it's always that little bit harder, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. To get up,
it's easy
to get up for those games that really, really matter. It's a mind game, as you said. It's between the ears. It gets to the point, you know, they're all amazingly talented cricketers. That's why they're there. So, you know, you look on paper, but when you've got Australia versus India, you've got probably close to the best 22 players available in the world, bar a couple from, you know, New Zealand, South Africa. But overall, you know, looking at two really strong teams. So the skills there, it comes down to those mental strategies and tactic. And I think just that, as we just said, the fact that they'd done it easy, and I don't think that did any favours. They were so dominant, it actually did them a disservice into the when the final came around.
Often happens in sport with final. Going back to Travis Head, his catch though, and they said it could be game breaking, and it was. I don't know about you, but when the ball ended up from Sharp and he chased it, I thought
I didn't think much chance. No, I agreed. Thought exactly the same as you.
And he pulled it off, and it changed the game. If Sharma had kept going, who knows? But said Kohli and Rahul came in, had to slow it down a bit. Basically, didn't it? They never got out of second gear. And they're only in third gear at the start.
Yep, correct. Yeah.
But look, absolute huge kudos to Australia. Just did the job, as our team often so often does. You know, when it matters, games, they love it. Look, India dominated team. So they, you know, their results and their performances were outstanding. But at the end of the day, it comes with, it's about, you know, no one sort of meant years to come. It doesn't matter how many pool games you win or how good you look, whoever wins the tournament. Two things that interest me. Quite a few sour. One or two. Is it Mohammad Shaikh, a former batter who I don't really recall, but on social media he was a little bit bitter, saying, "Yeah, Australia won, but team, you know, look at all this for India," and everyone and caned him and said, "Yeah, champ, it means bugger all." But Henry Blofield, bit of controversy here. He basically said, "Yeah, great win. Glad Australia won." Forget how he worded it. India are getting too big. Okay, which is interesting. And I thought, okay, yes, a little bit of definitely high self-confidence. Some would say a little bit of arrogant. But yeah, I don't know whether I agree with that comment.
I saw that as well. I interpreted that slightly different to you. I think to me, he was talking about the whole organisation of cricket in India, not just the team, in the fact that India, the BCCI, I think it's called, wields so much power in the way cricket is now organized globally. And I think there's a bit of resentment there from the old school, as you would appreciate being your traditional English people. And I think it was more a crack at, they've got all this power, but we brought them back a peg. And I think rather than just having a point at the team, it was more at the whole Indian structure of cricket and their power. That's how I interpreted that.
Yeah, which is fair enough. And I don't think it was racial. You know, there is some people out there who...
No, I don't. I didn't think it was racial in any way. It was more about the now power structure within the organisation of the cricket circles and the power. And it's because of TV dollars and population, the cricket, now Indian cricket now wields and, you know, controls a lot of the decisions when and where tournaments and how much games are played and all things like that. And I think I interpreted Moira's comment around that rather than just this team being arrogant.
Which is fair enough. But hey, made for good reading regardless.
Yeah.
Facts speak for themselves. End of the day, India had a great tournament but couldn't get the job done when they needed. And our boys, you know, celebrated long and hard. I don't know anymore. Majority of them came home. Travis Head and Liss stayed on for the 2020 tournament. What the hell's that about?
Let's talk about that in a minute because I've got a couple of questions about the World Cup. But yeah, they did stay, and I'll have a chat of my opinion on that in a sec. Look, I think for me, two major talking points about the tournament, apart from Australia winning. One, the outrageous length of the tournament, and I don't know what to do about that because they've already restructured it. Rather than the pool games, they've now got just everyone, qualifying teams all play each other once, but it just took too long. And the other thing that, you know, the debacle that was England, given the fact they were previous champions. They were defending champions, and to say they didn't show up is an understatement. So look,
they didn't care, did they?
I don't know what's going on. Is it too much cricket? Is the team they picked? I don't know. You know, very proud cricket nation. Obviously, the ongoing rivalry between Australia and England in cricket is second to none, and usually a really healthy competition. So I guess we always in the back of mind take note of how England's performing. And I just look at that team, and it's not like they were in the middle of the pack. They were like, did they finish second last to Holland? The Netherlands,
very
I think.
Very lucky not to finish dead last. And to me, they didn't seem to care. And it's sort of like, okay, we put all, and they put a lot of building for that last World Cup when they won.
Mm.
A little bit luckily, but they won. And it's sort of like, oh, we've climbed that mountain in the players' minds. And it's like, yeah, we don't care anymore. We won it.
We tick the box. We tick the box. We've done that now, and we don't have to worry about it anymore. I agree. That's what it looked like.
And look, and the players would rightly say, no, that's not right. But to me, it was like once it got hard, and let's face it, much easier than it be, but from what I gather, playing in the subcontinent is still hard. And as soon as things got a bit hard, they just gave in.
Yeah, it was pretty sad, actually. Historically, the strength England has been in all formats of the game, and more recently have really, stepped up in Test cricket and stepped up in One Day cricket. And as we just said, defending World 50 over champions, to be that poor, like that poor. It's not like they finished fifth or sixth. They were whatever we had, 8-9 teams, whatever it was. And I think they only finished above the Netherlands. I think Afghanistan actually finished above them in the end.
Oh, Afghanistan only made.
They had a really good tournament.
They had a slowish start. They had a wonderful tournament. They were right. Wasn't for Maxwell heroics. They could have beaten Australia, and they were good. Look, congratulations to India. They put on a great, despite reports at the start, it was only Indian games. No, it was well supported. Some really, like cricket now, it's all for the batter. It's all about the runs and that. But mind you, the bowl, people look at me. I think some of us still upset. You look at the bowling figure, and if they got over runs against them, that's these days, any hink under 60 is a new 50,
Know
what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
If you go for less than 60 runs, you've done okay. So that's changed a bit. But yeah, some really good play. Great to see those so-called lower. Well,
yeah, even the Netherlands, I think I watched Australia. I didn't watch much of it, as you know, but I did flick it on and watch some of Australia versus the Netherlands. And I was South Africa versus the Netherlands. And they were beaten, but it wasn't outrageous. They had enough skill to be competitive, which was really good to see those developing nations start to become more and more competitive. I think that's good for the game globally.
What it isn't good for, though, I guess, it shows you where Zimbabwe and things.
Oh, West Indies. Didn't even qualify. How bad's that?
That's in talk for another day, but really, really sad. But no, look, overall, good tournament. I think it got a lot more traction and viewership, particularly here. I guess Australia doing so well, then it probably... Yeah, me and you both at the start.
Not at all. And I think, as you said, once Australia came good, they lost those first three games, I think it was, or two games, and then got on their roll after that. Then the interest started to grow when it got to the serious end. But back to my other question, they've got to change the length. It's too long. And why are we having days off? Why are we having days off in between and not playing three games? India's a huge country. You can play three games back-to-back, nearly. At least two back-to-back, and a day game and a night game across the country, and right. Do that every day.
It's unbelievable. And when you think about how many games they play in the IPL, totally unnecessary. But I guess now they can stretch it out as long as they want, do what they want, I guess. So put it this way, Greg, we're having this discussion years ago about how long the World Cup.
Yeah, you're right.
So
you're right.
I just don't think it's going to change. So player of the tournament was Virat Kohli. Wonderful, four centuries. Player of the final was Travis Head, no surprise. One thing, look, the new stadium was fantastic. In Australia, though, they get the crowd to the number, don't they? There's 100,027 at the MCG, AFL Grand. So the crowd, I've read over the day, 70,000, 92,000, 120,000.
Right.
No one seems to be able to put a proper figure on it.
Interesting.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure state.
Okay. Apparently. That's fascinating. Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, look, move on. Well done. Great result, great tournament. And now they're looking forward to, home for the summer, test match. And, I think there's another T20 world. So the caravan rolls on. Now, just while we're on the subject of sports, of sort of bat and ball sports, Greg, during our little hiatus, the MLB, the World Series Baseball, was played. And it was a good series, but only short. The Texas Rain won their first ever World Series. Well done to them. But they beat the Arizona Dynamo 4-1. Which now was great to see because two teams have struggled a lot in recent years to have, a Tech versus Arizona thing. Yeah, Southern American baseball. Yeah, so 4-1, the first ever title. Bruce, I forget how to pronounce his name. Bosch, really great signing. He's a manager. He managed the San Francisco Giants, a couple of World Series, and they decided that that's the sort of manager they needed. And they got him over and, so got the job done in his first season there. And Corey Seager, the whole roster, but Corey Seager, shortstop, who won a title with the LA Dodgers a couple of years ago. And so he came, just that winning act, I guess, really sort of helped him out. Yeah, so Texas Rangers, they're first ever World Series, which we laugh about each year. Well, victory. All right. Well, still on ball and a club this time, Greg, your favorite. The Australian PGA has been played as we speak. But I don't know if you saw yesterday, but Cameron Smith, it reminded us all that even the very best can have bad days. I don't see any.
No, I didn't. I honestly didn't.
So we'll go through the lead in that. But Cameron Smith, you know, British Open, Open champ, world's best. He had an ordinary two over, three over on the first day. And yesterday, he had an absolute Barry Crock. He finished at nine over and missed the cut. So of the whole field, he was like eight flat. That's how bad he went. And anyway, they had highlights, yeah, because he was in the top group yesterday. And he was a shattered man by the end. Absolutely shattered.
Just one of those days all sports people have without fail.
Yes. And I guess with golf, it's not like cricket or whatever. You get out, you look like an idiot. But golf, you've got to keep hacking your way around, you know, till that 18th hole.
Mm.
Yeah. So like I said, not great for Cam Smith, but reassuring for all us hackers.
Even the best have shockers.
The tournament itself, which ironically looks like it's part of the European, the prize money. But anyway, So Ning Wu Lee is lead 12 on one shot. Adam Scott, who was hoped well to get back on track a bit. He had a great round yesterday, I think, but he's 11. Jay Lyris, who I'm about, another Aussie, 10 under, and they're the top three. So, you know, today, as they say in golf, is moving day. Look, great to see at least some awesome good Aussie golfers coming back, make back to Australia. So I think it's so short now, the Australian golf season. I think it's the Australian Open next week.
Is it a bit earlier than it used to be?
That's always sort of been November.
Okay, I just thought it was more closer to summer than this early, but obviously, as you know, I don't take a lot of notice of golf. It's just always there in the background. I just was thinking it was closer to like December, Christmas time, but no, obviously clearly wrong.
Yeah, mostly November-ish, but the season used to last month. Yeah, you know, it would be until the New South Wales PGA, New South Wales Open, Victorian Open. Now it's just basic Australian PGA, Australian Open, Masters. Do they even have the Masters now? It's so, you know, yeah, it's been a little bit sad. It's Australian, you know, the professional golfing season. But anyway, the fact is we have a couple going now. Great. The Davis Cup final or final are on as we speak, and Australia are doing well.
Yeah, played a semi-final, I think it was Thursday night our time. Against Finland of all countries, and were very dominant. Won the two singles games. The doubles wasn't even played. The two singles boys got through. Popperin and Dimonois won their two singles respectively, and that has qualified Australia for the final of the Davis Cup, which is being held in Spain, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's in Spain.
I think, yes.
The other semi-final hasn't been played. I think it's played tonight our time, and that's against Serbia and Italy. So Australia will face the winner of that semi-final in the final over the weekend. Not sure what, I think it might be Monday our time. It might be Sunday Europe time, so it'll be Monday morning our time, Monday. Obviously, if Serbia get through, Djokovic, the world domineering number one, number two, is representing Serbia. So that would be a tough ask if Australia faced them. Italy have a very good up-and-coming young guy, apparently, whose name escapes me, but also quite strong. So either way is going to be tough, but very nice to see Australia get that back in the... I think they were in the final last year and lost to Canada. So
they've been doing well. It's we've spoken before. It's a talk about, you know, the way they do it now.
It's appalling. Really sad that the Davis Cup's where it is now, the way it's structured.
Well, even this final, so it's in Spain, but Spain aren't in it. It's basically become a victim, hasn't it, of the tour and not being considered, you know, to play this tournament with no prize attached for country on it. Sad. But look, at least it's still being played. At least it still exists, I guess. But yeah, it's a real shame the way it's been,
I agree.
Well, under Australia.
Yep. Follow that over the weekend. I said, I think it's early Monday morning our time. I think it's Sunday Spanish time that final will be played. So Monday morning, we should know the result of that. But good luck to the Aussie boys. And hopefully they go one step better than they did last year.
Well, it could come down to the double, couldn't it? Because you'd assume Djokovic, just assume that no disrespect, but if he was to win both his singles, that's two. And so we would have to, win both the reserve, you know, whoever the other Serbian player is in the double. So anything's possible.
Yeah, got to be there. And they've got to the final. So, yeah, as you said, anything's possible. Good luck to them over the weekend. Follow that up next pod.
Now, you're hitting zone again. The Vegas Grand Prix didn't quite go to plan, did it?
No. So a lot of money, a lot of promotion for this Grand Prix in Las Vegas. So the US actually had three Grand Prix this year. The new owners of the sport are US-based, and they're really trying to push that motor racing in the US. I think they see a lot of dollars there that haven't been accessed before to promote the sport and have organized the three races, and a lot of money spent on Las Vegas. It was a street circuit. They basically redid the whole, the straight was down the main strip of Vegas, and they spent billions of dollars in Vegas to get ready for this race. And it was held, as we talked about last time, it was a very funny timing. So it was like literally at midnight, the race was held US time. So it appealed to European television and all the rest of it. But on one of the very first practice sessions was cancelled as because a manhole, because it was a street circuit, the manhole entry to the road became loose and damaged significantly one or two of the cars. And they had to stop the practice. But because of the timing and everything, the crowd was told they had to leave and couldn't. By the time it restarted, the crowd got to see 13 minutes of this practice before they told they had to leave. Now, from what I read, some of the tickets even to this early practice session were well over $1,000. And in compensation, they were offered a $200 voucher at the F1 gift shop, literally, which I just thought was hilarious.
The Optus.
Yeah, a bit like the Optus debacle.
You can have a little bit of data, boys.
Happened right. Recently in Australia, but it was a bit in that vein, I guess you could say. The other bizarre thing was Ferrari, I think it was the car that was majorly damaged and had to change a battery, got penalized because they had to change a battery, but that was because the road was faulty. But the FIA imposed a normal penalty for replacing a battery after the qualifying practice had started, even though it was no fault of theirs. So very bizarre, don't fully understand all the rules, but yeah, the Ferrari driver's name escapes me, got penalized because they had to change a battery in his car due to this error in the road. So very bizarre start. But I think once they got into the race was, you know, as we expected, Verstappen won one more and is clearly dominant. The car is clearly dominant. And there's one race to go in Abu Dhabi this weekend and that's it for the season. But as we talked about well over a month ago, the championship was done and dusted quite a while ago and Verstappen has wrapped it up. So credit to Red Bull and credit to him as a driver. But yeah, look, I think, you know, the contract for Las Vegas will continue. And knowing the American Las Vegas culture, they're certainly going to make it a winner. There's certainly a push for sports in Las Vegas with the football team, NFL starting there. The MLB baseball's just been announced they're moving. The Oakland A's have officially are definitely 100% relocating to Vegas. They have the women's WNBA team that are dual champions now. And there's a real push for expansion for a men's team there as well. So, and they've obviously got the Ice Hockey Golden Knights, which are two-time champions already. So sport in Vegas is new but growing. And I think F1 is just on the back of all that. Obviously, sadly, a lot of betting money in Vegas, which is driving a lot of this, as you would expect.
That's what it's all about.
It is. But yeah, look, I think it was good. I think it'll stay. Obviously, a few teething problems, but successful. I think one of the disappointments, the championship was done and dusted, so there was no real result could impact anything, and that's probably a bit disappointing for the race.
It would have been good to have it in the wire. It was interesting, Verstappen, I heard him quoted or saw him quoted in the paper. He wasn't a huge, he said that he loves Vegas, but he goes to Vegas, he wants putting money on red or black, you know, basically enjoying Vegas for Vegas, not, yeah, the race. But I agree with you. It'll become a success, you know, and obviously would have generated me.
Yeah, look,
I'm sure it's there to stay.
Given the way they're pushing sport in Vegas and having homegrown events there, I think it's there to stay. And I think they will manipulate it and push it and massage it till it's a winner. And I think the dollars are there to support it. So I think we'll see the Las Vegas Grand Prix on the calendar for many, many years to come and probably a growing success story.
Well, just on the four-wheel type sport, Greg, the supercar. Now, a championship that is going down. So this weekend, it's the Adelaide 500, the last event of the series, And so we have Brodie is leading very narrowly. He's on 2,696 points. Shane Van Gisbergen on 2,055. And they're going to battle. Will Brown is third on 2,000. So, two events, I think it is, this weekend. So whoever, you know, trumps their car title.
It's really good when sport like that goes down to the wire. I think, you know, those progressive scores that move along like racing does, if they drive and keep it close, I think it makes such exciting events, not just the very last event, but leading up to it as well, because every point matters.
It does. Look, and great, obviously, for the supercar fans in Adelaide, you know, to go. And that's always the danger, is having the last event. It can be all over by then, but if it's not, and it's still alive, great taste.
Very much so.
So, no, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. Greg, I might go over to while you're hot. Might have a bit of an update on the NBA. So the NBA, they're what, about 10 games into it?
So we're up to about, 16 games, 15, 16 games. In the East, we've got Boston coming first. Orlando, very surprisingly. And if you remember my pod very early on, Orlando was one of my sneakies. They're a bit of an OKC, very young up-and-coming team, been developing for a few years. Well, at the moment, they're 11-5 and sitting second in the East. So interesting to see if they can continue that. Milwaukee coming third, Philadelphia fourth, Miami fifth, New York Knicks round out the top six. Then you've got the play-in tournament teams, if we were to do that today. Indiana in seventh, Cleveland in eighth, Atlanta in ninth, and Toronto sitting 10th. So that's how the East is Eastern Conference stands at the moment. In the West, we've got Minnesota sitting on top with 11-3. A bit like the East, we've got OKC sitting second with 11-4. So, Orlando and OKC, a bit of mirror imaging of each other in the two conferences. The only thing I'd say different between the two is Orlando's picked up a couple of veteran players to try and push a bit harder, whereas OKC haven't done that yet. They're still relying on their young guns. So see what happens with that. Denver sitting, who are my favorites overall, sitting third at the moment. Dallas in fourth. Phoenix in fifth. Sacramento sitting in sixth. Then we've got the Lakers seventh. Houston eighth. New Orleans ninth. And the Clippers rounding out the top 10 at the moment. So that's how the two conferences sit. Now, I don't know if you've watched much basketball, seen much lately, but they've started what they call the in-season tournament this year. So it's a tournament within the tournament. So you've got... What they've done, this was the commission's idea, been pushing it for a few years, and first year they've done it. So as we've talked about before, NBA is a very long season, 82 game season, and they found that in the middle of the season, people started to lose interest. You'd have the interest at the beginning, it'd go through a lull in the middle and ramp up again in the new year heading to the playoffs. So he came up with what he called the in-season tournament. So they play games that count for the normal season, but also the in-season, which is in the middle. It started already, and it culminates with finals in Las Vegas. So all in-season tournament games count towards normal season, but they have their own standings as well. And the way they differentiate, they're playing on different colored courts. The courts look horrendous. If you look at it, turn on, and you see a disgusting, colored, bizarre court, it's an in-season game. And they've done that just...
Because I saw a little bit of Spurs and the Kings, and that was a very interesting color.
Yeah, so that would have been an in-season tournament game. Now, that still counts to the normal season, but it counts to their other standings in the in-season tournament. And they've come up with it. Apparently, they put aside whatever it was, $6 million just to every team to have these special court. And sometimes they do back-to-backs where one night they play a normal court, they play again the next night, but it's also an in-season game, so they change the court over. So every club's got two courts going on at the moment. It's crazy. And they look awful. Visually on TV, they look awful. So I don't know what they're going to do about that in the future. I get the markings. I get some sort of representation that game is also a mid-season tournament game, but the way they're done, I can't stand it. So yeah, that's just to try and create more interest for the players and the spectators during...
Do they have finals of it during the season?
Yes. So the finals and the semifinals and finals of that will happen in the middle of the season. Those teams go off to Las Vegas. And
okay.
I think every player, the winning team, gets $1 million, which LeBron James couldn't care less. But if you're number 15 on a team, to get an extra $1 million, that could be worthwhile. So it's a concept that seems to be... There was a lot of doubters at the beginning of the year, but people seem to have adopted and like it from what I'm reading. So see what happens there. And I'll give another update when we've got a few more rounds of the in-season tournament going. But that's why if you watch basketball, sometimes you see a disgusting, bizarre court. It's to represent it's an in-season tournament game.
Okay, so essentially a team can be having a poor year, but if they win in a couple of in-season games.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. So, for instance, the Lakers are actually winning their group. They're 4-4 wins, no losses for in-season games at the moment. Even though they're not performing well, they're actually winning their group for in-season game. Sacramento are 2-0 for their in-season game. So whereas OKC, which aren't doing very well, are coming 4th out of 5 in their pool for in-season. So it's kind of bizarre the way but it creates interest in this sort of... So it's a competition within a competition, if you like, at the moment.
Look, anything like this, organisations, at least they try something.
Yeah, I agree.
If it doesn't work, you just kick it out.
Yeah, so the commissioner... has been pushing this for a number of years and finally got it up and running. The owners all agreed to it for this year. So interesting to see if it continues. At the moment, I'd say yes, because I think it's coming off more positive than they expected it to. But yeah, as you said, at least they're trying something to make things interesting again.
See how it pans out. But we'll stay in that part of the world, Greg.
Yep.
And look at the NFL. Sorry if I interrupted you.
No, go for it.
For the NBA?
No, go for it.
Look, it's getting about mid-season, probably a little bit above a pass in NFL. Some teams have already, basically possible to make it, and quite a few sort of in that, even 50, as they say, sort of, 500, 5-5 type scenario. So in the AFC, in the East, Dolphins are lead. Actually, I'll do it. But the Dolphins doing really well, 8-3. That's Chiefs, just keep doing what they do, 7-3. The Ravens are leading the AFC North, 8-3. Cleveland Browns, 7-3. So they're having a good season. Jaguars, 7-3 in the AFC South. The Texans, not far behind. And the Buffalo Bills, who, by their standards, a bit up and down this season, they're 5. Within the AFC, my mob, 5-5, their star quarterback, Joe Burrow, is out of struggle. Probably, I mentioned the Browns really well. Their Raiders and Chargers so well. Probably Denver Broncos, 5-5. That's, they're probably going a little bit better than expected. Patriots, 2-8. How the mighty have fallen.
Mm.
So, but that's how the AFC East is looking. Look, at, even at this state, not quite likely it's going to be at Philly Eagles versus the Kansas City Super Bowl. The Eagles are on fire. They're 9-1, the NFC East. And the Cowboys are 8-3. So they're both really dominating. 49ers, 8-3 in the West. Lions, the Detroit Lions had an outstanding season. You know, they've been down the bottom for many a year, but they're 8-3. Doing really, really well. Some are doubting whether they'll stand up in the playoff, but they're certainly going to be there. And funny with NFC South, New Orleans Saints, 5-5, and they're so poorly up going. 4-6, the Falcons and Bucks, and the Carolina Panthers, 1-9. So they're right down the bottom. They're looking like getting the first round draft pick next year.
Just touching on what you said about American sport, and we've talked about this before with, you know, basketball's in the East and West Conference. You've got the AFC and NFC in the football, you've got baseball divided in their two competitions. So you can often get two best teams across the whole sport, but not in the playoff series because they're in the same half.
It's just the way
they do, because they've got the number of teams, so many teams, they have to divide it up. And I understand totally why it happens, but you see it happen in all their sports that sometimes the best teams end up in there playing off in their own conference and not in the, you know, the playoffs or Super Bowl or whatever sport it might be.
So often you're right. The conference championship is the best game, is the two best teams in the country.
Correct. That's what you said much better than I was trying to say.
Yeah, it happens, doesn't it? But yeah, well, at this stage though, I mean, I think if it was to be Philly, Kansas City, it would be good because they are the two best teams in their comp. So yeah, I guess it's, yeah, one of the nature of the beast.
Yeah. One thing I love, and I certainly haven't had the time to get into it like you have, and I plan to now that my university's finished, follow the NFL, but I do love it's a much shorter season than the other American sports.
I love it too.
We've talked about baseball and what their 160, 180 game season. Basketball, we just talked about, is 80-odd games. I think the hockey's about 80-odd games as well. It's really easy to lose interest in that middle section, and I think the way the NFL does it and the number of games they play, it creates that, maintains that interest. They start later and they finish earlier, and I think that's really good for the sport in terms of spectator. I think they've nailed it.
I love it, Greg, because every game matters.
Yes.
Particularly early on. If you go 0-3, the pressure's on from then on. You know, like my team did, I think, being 3, you can still make it, but it just makes it so interesting. So, yeah. So, and there's nearly every game, and maybe there might be one or two at the end, not so influential on the season, but every other game, yeah. So really, you think about it, they play 17, 18 games. So you only get about 8 home games.
Yeah. As opposed to the basketball where they're paying, you know, 82 plus finals. And what baseball, we said they pay 100 and something games over, 162 games. Like, that's just, it's hard to maintain. You know, I know your avid fan does, but that's a lot of, and that's expensive to follow the sport that much to even get to home game.
There would be some who do it, who go to every single baseball home game, but by God,
it would be, wouldn't it? So yeah, I think that's a real strength of the NFL in the American sporting landscape.
No, it's great. And they do it so well. And the crowd,
yeah,
the crowds are always packed. Doesn't seem to matter how teams are going. Really loyal fans.
Yeah.
And totally agree. They just do it so well.
Yeah.
So look, moving forward, it's getting the crunch time. Great that you met you, that where my family, we're going on a holiday shortly over to the US. So we are going to be at the Buffalo Bills Chargers game, which I think the second last round.
Yeah, a bit jealous. Having never been to an NFL game in live, I'm a bit jealous of that. So yeah, hopefully
really looking forward to it.
Hope you and the young man enjoy it. It should be an awesome experience.
Yeah, really. So the NFL, it's getting towards the business end. And, yeah, so basically up, you know, January, the playoffs start.
Okay.
Mid-January. So it'll be really interesting to see how it all pans out.
Because they have one of their big rounds this week, isn't Thanksgiving football a huge event?
Yeah. They normally only have one game Thursday nights, but there was three yesterday. And there was a game this morning, Miami and New York Jets, which, no surprise, the Dolphins won that reasonably comfortably. Yeah, so that's huge weekend. Can I just say, nothing to do with sport. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Thanksgiving. Hey, giving thanks, great. But bizarre the thing in America, so they big family events, so people travel. They do it all 1 month before Christmas at the end of November and then do it all over again.
Well, it's nearly, having been, I've actually been in the States once for Thanksgiving, it's nearly bigger than Christmas. In terms of family travel, Thanksgiving rates higher than certainly travel for Christmas. So it's probably their biggest, I think it is their biggest travel weekend as a country, even more so than Christmas. It's, yeah, that extra long weekend because they get the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday holiday. So it's quite a long, long, long weekend for the Americans. So yeah. The whole thing, my daughter and I were laughing about the whole, thinking of the perspective of native, indigenous Americans. What are we giving thanks for? Our land was stolen. Our crops were stolen. Our harvest was stolen. Our land was invaded. So I'm not sure we're all giving thanks, but certainly I think that needs to be considered. We're laughing about that yesterday. But yes, it's a huge family event. I know the NFL make a huge weekend of it. So great. From a sporting perspective, it's awesome. Great. Yeah.
It is awesome. Yeah. So loving watching the NFL. All right, Greg. Well, in terms of events that have been happening, I know we've probably bit the women's BBL is going, it's almost getting finaling on quite nicely. Obviously the NBL.
Yes.
They're not
quite halfway, a bit under halfway. They actually got a weekend off. There's a FIBA break this week, hence there's no men's competition. It's actually global FIBA Olympic qualifying tournaments around the globe, but because Australia qualified for the Olympics at the World Cup, even though they didn't have a great World Cup, because they finished first in Oceania, they get automatic qualification. There's actually no games Australia's involved in. So we just have no basketball this week, sadly, local basketball. But Melbourne United looking dominant. I'll do an update next time when we're back on court, but Melbourne United, certainly the standout team, outstanding performance.
Good.
And my boys, the Illawarra Hawks, absolute basket case, actually sacked their coach last week and have appointed interim head coach, which was one of their assistant coaches. Happens to be Jason Tatum's father. Jason Tatum, superstar player from Boston Celtics. Happens to be his father is a new interim head coach for the Hawks. So we'll see where that heads.
Okay. Interesting to see where that goes. Also, I didn't mention the soccer. Look, it would have been
very tough. I'm glad you raised that because it would have been very difficult.
Playing Palestine, happening over there at the moment. Now, obviously, it wasn't played in Palestine. It played in Wake, I believe. But very scrappy 1-0. Would have been strange.
Was that World Cup or Asia Cup qualifying?
World Cup.
Back on World Cup qualifying again already?
I think so.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Well, could be wrong, Greg, but I'm sure it was.
No, I think you might be right. I just wasn't sure. But yeah, no, I did read it was very scrappy 1-0 victory to Australia, but it would have been very tough for those to play that Palestinian team given the current global situation.
And for the Palestinian team.
Absolutely.
Where their heads would have been.
Yeah.
But I guess in those circumstances, to travel all that way to get the job done, albeit unconvincingly. So, good effort from the Socceroos as well. Last thing I'll mention, Greg. Look, we know it's off-season and they always try and make, but Tigers rumoured to be breaking the bank 4.5, 3 or 4 seats for Penrith 5-8, Rome Luai. Now, everyone seems to have a different opinion whether, yes, the Tigers need to pay that to get quality play. I think it's a very, very even. The reason is I think it's superstar money for a player who is a very good player and very successful player, but not my opinion. I don't know what you
think. Look, I wonder how Jerome Luai would go outside the Penrith machine without those players surrounding him. As you said, very, very good player. I don't want to diminish his ability. But when you look at what's surrounded him over the last few years and he's amazingly successful as a team, what that would look like outside of that organization, those players around him, I'm not sure where his skill independently would be. But the other half, yeah, the Tigers probably have to pay overs, as do my boys, the Dragons, to get players of any quality at all at the moment.
And I get that. And I mentioned as long as you pay that money, that you need to get it.
Correct.
Although it was never going to happen in reality, I had no issue when they threw the bank at Kempster. It was never going to sign. But if they had it somehow, he is the real deal. 5-8 running around. I agree with you. I just think Luai played outside Cleary, who's the best halfback in the game, organizer and all the rest of it, behind an absolute monster and awesome pack of forward.
Yep.
And even Cleary hinted at that. Even Ivan Cleary, the coach, when he sort of said it, Jeff. But he's never had to organize a team. And he's not really that sort of player.
And look, the other side of that, if I'm Luai, I'm taking that money and running. He's got 2 premierships. He's done it. He's won. Take the money, look after your family, set yourself up for life. I'd take that dollars. Seriously, he's got nothing to prove now. He's got 2 premierships. He's been successful. He's been part of that organization. Take the big dollars and look after yourself and your family going forwards. I would totally understand that.
I just think it wouldn't be bad, but I just don't give 0.5.
You're probably right. You're probably right. But who else is out in the market that's going to help turn the Tigers around?
That's right. It's not like quality halfbacks or whatever.
Well, let's talk about halfbacks. The Dragons just signed Kyle Flanagan. My God, here we go again.
And I saw, look, nothing against the kid. I saw him being interviewed on the news last night and, you know, like to get father-son combination. And they look at Penrith, how good it's got. But I did mention, I turned around to Kelly and mentioned, who is a Dragon supporter, my wife, but mentioned, yeah, there's only one thing slightly, the talent of the son in that little pup. Nathan Cleary, Kyle Flanagan.
Yeah, and look, Kyle Flanagan's probably a really good backup half, bit of a utility running off the bench. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but if he's our first choice halfback, we're in all sorts of shit.
No, that's a very poor indictment for our team, if that's the case. And it seems that's the case, so...
And look, poor old Flanagan's been shuffled around. He, you know, the Roosters had a cracker, didn't work out. Went to the Dogs, had a crack, didn't work out. Now, you know, the father signs with Dragons, and all of a sudden he's a Dragons player. So we'll see how where it goes. But yeah, I'm not overly confident where that'll end up, sadly.
Well, I think it speaks for all the criticism that Roosters get. When they pay big money for a youngster and they get rid of him quick, smart, it says he's just not, whoever it is, he's just not up to the job.
Completely agree with you. But the Dragons didn't pay $4.5 million. So.
No, they certainly didn't. No, they didn't, mate. So we will see. Yeah, so watch this space for Luai and Tiger. Yeah, but Luai's still got next year at Penrith, regardless.
Yes.
It's 2000 and onwards, so who knows? Lots could change between then and now.
Definitely. Could be lots of player movement. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Greg, that's it from me. Anything else you want to
do? No, I think we've covered all the, as you said, we've probably missed something for sure. Been a month, so probably, I'm sure we've missed something, but covered all the main bits that we had. Oh, rugby, Australian rugby. The shit show that is Rugby Australia.
Do we have to?
Let's quickly mention it because then we don't have to mention it again. We'll bring it up this week, then we can just forget about it.
Yeah, sure.
I think Eddie Jones technical was still the coach last time we spoke. And we both said, well, that's not going to last. And I don't think it lasted 3 days after we spoke. And he was...
I think he said he was there to stay. Yes. And then within 2 days, he was gone.
He was gone. And since then, the head of, what's his name, McLennan, basically been sacked from the board running Rugby Australia. They are just a basket case. And look, rugby's not your or my favourite sport, but it's historically very strong in Australia and has a very strong following. And it's really sad to see it in such a position that it's in.
It is. Look, and as much as we, you know, have a few drives at rugby, the supporters are very loyal.
Absolutely.
You know, the old boys club, and they love it. You know, blokes travel from all over the state, you know, Bledisloe Cup, Test match, and they get together with their old teammates and, you know, get on the beers, and they have a great time.
Yeah, no.
And they love their
rugby. Not our favourite, the way it's run or officiated or the style of play, but you want to see rugby union in a good place in Australia as part of our broader sporting landscape. And it's just disaster at the moment. They've got a lot of work to do. And the fact that Australia's hosting the next World Cup, they've got a lot of work to do as an institution organisation in running that event, but then on the field, putting a team that's going to be competitive.
That's right. And also the governance, because part of the issue was wanting to go to a model that's, is it more, because at the moment it's like, is that true? Six different state
unions. Yeah. Thing. Yeah. And they want to bring it centralised, but then the states balked at that and they sort of ganged up against McClellan, ousted him. So obviously there's a lot of infighting the way, as you said, the governance structure is organised at the moment. It's creating a bit of concern and dissent. So they've got some work to do, the poor old rugby people. But yeah, Eddie Jones, the experiment failed magnificently. It was a disaster from where to go.
Absolute debacle. And debacle, that's only, I can't find a word.
No, that's a very polite. Yeah.
It was horrendous. It was a absolute basket case. But anyway, look, rugby, yeah, what next now? Well, look, one thing that must be said, rugby, they do have smart people involved or who have played the game.
Yes, yeah.
So hopefully they can.
Look, I'm hoping, and look, they're very, as you said, I'm really hoping the Phil Kearns and those sort of era of players, John Eales, get back involved in the game. Nick Farr-Jones, because as you said, very smart business people outside of the sport, but a deep understanding of the sport itself. So I really hope some of that culture, they draw on some of that playing group that are now business people, successful business people, to come back in and help the organisation, because they have the ability to see it from both sides. And I think that'd be really important to build the sport back up and create that culture that was successful under that John Eales and Nick Farr-Jones era. Right? Hugely right. Successful.
Yeah. So hopefully they can look, and for all his faults, and I never liked, but John O'Neill.
Yes.
But at least the game was firing.
You did. He ran a tight ship and he ran it well.
Look, hopefully rugby, you know, for, like you said, for all our little criticisms, hopefully they can get their get their stuff together.
Yeah, so I just thought we'd mention that because it has been a lot of media attention and it has been a debacle. I guess it can only be up. They've got a clean slate right now. They've got to be careful with the decisions they make, but hopefully, you know, who's going to be brave enough to take on the coaching role at the moment right now? That's a big ask. So they're going to have to think carefully and choose wisely, I think, about who that next coach is going to be, because there's going to be a lot of pressure on whoever that might be after the Eddie Jones failure.
That's right. So they have to think that through carefully.
Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that, but that's me done.